Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain, Bradley Burrows, and guests.
Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. This is episode number 60. We've made it. This is 60.
iPad 3 tomorrow.
Do we get to collect a gold card now?
iPad 3 tomorrow.
I think it's 65 for the gold card, isn't it? For the senior citizens gold card.
We have to wait.
And that
then
relates to age, not really to the number of podcasts you produce.
But at least Skip can get on the bus here nice and cheaply.
That's right.
I'm sick as a dog. Sorry, everyone.
Well, we hope you make it through this this episode, Brad. So, in the studio tonight, we've got Skip Parker in the corner. How are you, Skip?
Yeah, good, man. I'm really good. Actually, feeling great.
I'm super. I'm great. It's Brad here. I've been playing with lots of toys, and we can talk about some of it, and some of it I'm going to have to be very quiet on. So, I'm just prepping everyone now. If there's silence from me, it's because I like my job.
And Paul Spain. So that's us. We will jump in. We've got an interesting lineup tonight, as always. Now, first up, there's been a bit of drama in the media over the last couple of days around a telecom customer being billed $2,000 for 70 megs of data while they were overseas.
Never. Drama in our media around telecom? You're having me on.
Well, this one was an interesting one because in some ways, we just shouldn't even be talking about this, and this should have never been in the paper. Because for somebody to be surprised that they got billed $2,000 for using 70 megs worth of data, just to me is stupidity. Because if they've done this on their iPhone or virtually any other smartphone,
device is irrelevant, isn't it? It's basically the concept.
Well, no, but I think the device is part of the picture, because as soon as you all devices now, they will turn off roaming by default, right, for data. So if you decide to go overseas with your iPhone, yep, and then you decide to say, oh, I need to use some data, you have to actually flick a switch in the settings to turn it on, and it says, beware, the rates are very high for using data overseas. And this is the same across Android, Windows Phone, iPhone. So there's that reminder, and I think if anybody by now doesn't know that it's expensive to use data overseas, then whose fault is that? Surely this guy has been living under a rock and has ignored the warning from his phone.
But aren't they saying that there are cases overseas where the data rates are a lot lower than the Kiwi data rates? So effectively, in this case, Telecom is actually charging an exceptional premium for the rate. In comparison to other providers, it's a little bit cheaper.
Well, they charge, most of the carriers have a flat $30 a meg rate, or that there are some variances, but that's been the standard rate for roaming data for many years, and there are ways you can buy bigger bundles and so on, but this shouldn't be a surprise to anyone.
First off, the guy's a muppet. Secondly,
listening, sorry, muppet. We do like muppets.
No, I'm sorry, you're right. If you're going overseas, if you do not know now that you get in charge international roaming, which is, I've just read the article, he's claiming he didn't know. He was on an iPhone, but he went to the Cook Islands. Now, the Cook Islands telecommunications company is owned by
Telecom New Zealand.
Telecom New Zealand. And he's actually, in some ways, while I said he was a muppet, I can see where his point of argument is from. He's saying, it's the same organisation. I've just gone to the Cook Islands, and it's Telecom.
Yeah, but in
he's going to their internet connection. He's not coming back to New Zealand.
But it's not Telecom New Zealand. It is actually a different company. They might happen to own it, but still, it's international data usage. His phone would have told him. Everybody really knows that. And this has been going for years and years and years. And even to turn on roaming on a phone, you have to go through a thing to request that.
Okay, so I just
you would even have to check that the country you're going to, it's odd.
Just to clarify something here, the guy did receive a courtesy text when his bill reached $900 that he was paying for international roaming charges, and then he continued to do another $1,100.
Okay, yeah. So that's an interesting point. But
he did get told at $900. So I think good on Telecom for doing it. And the guy is a muppet.
I kind of think that's cool, and I kind of think that's really stupid as well. It's like, hey, congratulations, you've reached $900 of your bill. I mean, if I got that text, I'd be freaking out. It'd be kind of nice if they actually at the beginning.
I think they usually do, and it might have been that either he was quick or there was some issue. Because when you arrive in a new country, usually within a few hours, or quite actually usually quite quickly within a few minutes of coming on, you get those text messages. You get a message from the local carrier there, then you get a message from your New Zealand carrier saying, yeah, hey, you're roaming, this is the rate, etc., etc. Now, if that took a while to get to him, I don't think that's by design. There must be some other technical reason why that took a while to get to him.
No, he didn't. He's not saying he didn't get those first few messages. They just sent him a text message to say, hey, sir, we've just noticed your phone bill's $977 and we see you're overseas. That's the message that they sent them.
Oh, so he did get the initial saying, yep, at the moment he stepped off the plane, saying, hey, it's $30 a meg. So he ignored everything and then is basic. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, we should talk about this any longer.
I've got one quick update from Telegon, which is actually quite good on this. So,
Regardless of whether we agree or disagree that the guy did the right thing or didn't do the right thing, I still think it just seems ludicrous that we're paying such high data rates, considering that, I mean, is the data actually going anywhere other than on the internet in that space? I mean, why is the wholesale rates around it so high?
I think we all agree that those roaming rates are too high, and it's just one of the ways that the telcos, you know, make some very good revenue. You know, they're earning high dollars as well when international people come into New Zealand. So when someone from Australia or wherever comes into New Zealand, then Telecom New Zealand or 2degrees or Vodafone, they're making some nice money off those roaming customers too.
So I'll counter that with one in a second. Just Telecom have just updated saying that they're going to be introducing a new service this month, which allows if Paul's going overseas, he can say, I only want to spend $30 of international roaming charges, and they will give you text message updates at 260 or 100 megabits, depending on what you're doing. So that's quite a good. You can almost prepay what the data usage you're going to use overseas. For what you said about the offshore stuff, if they're coming from the EU, there's an EU law now which says that they can only be 10 to 15% higher than the in-country charges, even if they're coming to New Zealand.
Yeah, that hasn't come out yet, though.
Is it coming out?
That's still in process. Yeah. Okay, they've got changes underway at the moment. Some of those are coming through in 2014. There is some regulation, I think, there at the moment around calling. So on to more interesting topics. Windows 8 consumer preview. Now, we talked about the consumer preview last week, that it was landing, and it indeed did land late last week in New Zealand and around the world, obviously, and also the Windows 8 server product. Now, Brad, during the day when you're not podcasting, you work for some big corporation that happens to release this product.
Yes.
Now, you've had a bit more of a chance than us to play around with it on tablet devices and others, because you've got access to a fair bit of equipment there at the mighty Microsoft Corporation offices.
I can confirm or deny that.
How have you been enjoying having it on your laptop and so on? I've played with it on two devices. One is my laptop, which I've just done a clean build of, and one is my main PC at home, which probably my wife uses more than me. And I guess the surprise I got was she's picked it up really quickly and is quite enjoying it. How are you going? Because you're pretty much a power user.
Yeah, look, I mean, so I'm just going to think about how I'm going to word all this. So for me at the moment, I when I got the consumer preview on, I've got a touchscreen laptop. So, and it took me a while to get used to the change. And I think this is going to be the biggest thing for people that have used Windows since 95 or over the Vista years. It's a change, and that always frightens people a little bit. Things aren't quite where they used to be. And it does take a little while, and especially if you're a power user, you're so used to being able to navigate, open a command prompt with administrator rights and blah, 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 that it you don't know where all that stuff is now, because there's no start button. Everything's on a Windows Phone 7. But once I got, for me, once I spent about an hour or two going through, and I also lit it up, and well, what I mean by that is, with your Windows Phone, when you first get it, you go, wow, this is really cool. It's a new interface, something different. But then you add in your Gmail, your Hotmail, your Xbox Live accounts, and suddenly this device comes alive with all this information around social media. exactly the same thing with Windows 8 client.
Where you can hook it into Facebook.
Yep. And suddenly all the tiles are running and everything just suddenly it was like, wow, this is a different experience. Xbox Live on the tablet is a cool thing. Xbox Companion is amazing.
You have to jump through some hoops at the moment to get that working in New Zealand,
don't you?
And yeah. I had to do that with setting up my US settings to get that to work. But once you see it, that stuff is actually really, really good. And I know it'll only be a very small percentage of our listeners that are using a Windows phone, but some of those experiences that have been out on Windows phone are really moving across onto the tablet and onto the desktop, aren't they?
Yeah, now we've actually got a Samsung 700T here in the studio right now, which is one of the test units that we're allowed to play with and talk about. And obviously, this is probably, you know, this is a business device tablet, so it's not the ARM-based system at this point in time it's coming out. And you know what? The experience is really, really fluid, really quick. At the moment, I've had no issues at all running it. And the build that I've got is set up for my work. So on my laptop and then the tablet's a consumer, just home job. And for between both of them, between Word and everything, it just flicks between the desktop and the Metro interface beautifully at this point in time. So When an app is not Metro-based, so it looks like Windows 7, it'll flick back to the desktop and run. If it's a Metro app, it'll stay in that tile mode and go full screen and runs really nicely there.
Yeah, I think it's been interesting reading the various reviews coming in from media around the world and also watching, you know, the blogosphere and just people's comments on message boards, and it's been quite a mixed result of responses, I think. Quite surprisingly, most of the reviews have been very, very, you know, positive. It's sort of getting the buzz that you'll often see around something from Apple, and it's quite unusual sort of seeing that from a lot of the mainstream media.
I have to laugh, sorry.
but on the flip side, you've got some very vocal enthusiasts saying, I don't want to be forced to not have my start menu and to have to use Metro. And there's certainly a bit of that in blogs too, but what I found interesting was you actually have to use it and spend some time with it before making those calls, because once you do get used to it, you know, like you're saying, it lights up and there are more shortcuts and fast ways of doing things in Windows 8 than there actually ever were in 7.
Oh yeah.
Once you're logged in and you've got that Metro screen there, you can just start typing. It does an instant search. You don't have to, oh, I've got to go to the run command, or you've got to
hit the start button
yeah, or anything like that. You can actually just start typing, you know, straight from there and do your searches. And there are a whole lot of shortcuts. We were talking earlier, Brad, about where you slide your pointer to the bottom left-hand corner, you do a right-click, you've got access to a whole lot of admin-type functions. And, you know, these are things that took more steps than that in Windows 7.
I think the other key thing, and you raised a good two good points. The first one is that this consumer preview is designed for tablets, but also designed for PCs, laptops. So it's what's called more mouse-orientated. So where you've still got the point-and-click-based devices, all that, you do have a lot more functionality built in than the developer preview. And on the tablet, it's a lot more optimized. And I think the other thing you said before, and your lovely wife, for people that haven't used it, like my 7-year-old, he gets to test a lot of hardware, because it's interesting watching him have a go between the iPad. And again, he, like Selena, she picked it up really quick. He picked it up
so really
fast.
It's really intuitive, yeah.
But for us being a bit older, fuddy-duddy, techie people, yeah, we're so used to in our ways of how we like. I mean, I know people that switch the Windows 7 interface to look like Windows 95 still, you know. And these are IT people. Because that's what, yes, Skip, I'm looking at you. But that's what they like to use. And I think what we've got to realize is that for the 95% of the public out there, this will work just like iOS and Android has worked for them. And they're not going to have the gripes that we do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, most of the old keyboard shortcuts are there. You know, you can hit the start button, and it's, you know, instead of seeing the start menu and just seeing the first level of it, you get everything. And to me, that reminds me a little bit, for those that have used the newer versions of Office, you get the backstage menu when you hit the the icon, same word, you hit the Word icon at the or you hit the file menu, and that takes over the whole screen. And Metro works a similar way in replacing the start menu with something that takes over your whole screen. And I'm actually pretty comfortable with that. All of the old sort of shortcuts like Alt Tab and Most of those things work. Even old shortcuts that, you know, many people might have even forgotten are there from the old Windows 1 onwards days, Alt+F4 to close an application. It still works, you know, nearly 30 years on from when it, you know, when it came out. Most of those quick ways of doing things are there, and there's a bunch more. I think it's PC World that have published quite a good online article for those that have got the preview and are wanting to learn the tricks. A good online article covering a lot of what those keyboard shortcuts are for getting around.
There's almost one of every 26 of them. I think it almost covers the entire alphabet or something stupid.
Yeah, Windows key plus, you know, and whatever key. So there's all sorts of things you can do there. There are just shortcuts wherever you look. Once you learn, for instance, you've got the lock screen, and you know, on a tablet you can slide that up off your screen, or with a mouse you can pick that up and drag it off the screen, but just hit a key and it will automatically slide off the screen as well, right? So there's so many shortcuts.
And the other they've also got the touch logon working, and what I mean by that is you can have a photo, and rather than typing a password or a PIN, you can have key points that you can touch or swipe on that photo that are your security identifiers to log into the machine. And I've actually got that working. It took about 30 seconds to set up, and it's so cool to log on. I have a photo, I touch certain points on it, and suddenly it goes through. It's swipe or touch point based. So I can see that being built for video. My personal opinion here, not Microsoft's, we'll be looking at, like, if you've got a camera or something, you know, you've been able to recognize you and that type of stuff. It's getting there. So but close to my heart, Windows Server. Now that's the real meaty stuff here.
Well, that's kind of a big part of what you do day to day, right, is involved in server. And of course, you know, Skip and I, you know, working in the real world as well, Windows Server is out there running in most businesses, and so we come across it a lot. You're pretty excited about some of the new features coming through. Are there sort of one or two that for those of our listeners that are interested in this side of things, and I know it's not everyone, so we'll scoot over it reasonably quickly. But any things that sort of, you know, really jump out that you're excited about, Brad?
I think there's probably three things. First thing, the way I look at a lot of the Microsoft products is they do small incremental feature updates. You know, Vista to 7 cleaned it up and got it working. 7 to 8's got a complete new interface, but it's still built on 7. Windows Server 8 is a new server, bottom line. It is using Metro interface. So when you log into that, when you open and log in that device, you have a Metro which has all your health checks built in. So all the key functionality you want to know what's going on with your server environment is there in front of you. It's a big virtualization product. So whether you want to use it, or if you do want to do like virtualization between two devices, you don't have to have special storage anymore. So in the past you used to have software that would allow you to replicate between two things. And you can just do that with an Ethernet cable.
So that's just built in now, standard feature,
default,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It was interesting. I was reading ZDNet, their website, and there was a big article from one of their writers who, you know, is pretty heavily focused on VMware, which, you know, of course, for our listeners, is a big virtualization platform that holds sort of the lion's share of the market. And his comment was that the new things that have really come through in Windows Server 8 put Microsoft's virtualization platform sort of really in step with everything VMware has, but then also a number of steps ahead in terms of, you know, things you have to pay them thousands of dollars to get are sort of built into the product standard, or that you've got to go to maybe a third-party vendor to get, again, that those are built-in standard. So, it sounds as though they've actually done a really, really good job with this stuff.
I can't comment on other competitors' stuff. But, the other one that, for people that used to use Home Server, they've got a thing called Storage Pools now, which you can just have a whole lot of different disks, whether they're cheap, nasty, external storage, and make them into one giant big volume, and you can just put disks in there dynamically.
And Windows 8 on the desktop supports that as well, so it's not just the server one, which is good. It's going to be interesting to see how these big leaps forward sort of stir up the competition a bit. You know, VMware obviously will be looking at this stuff very closely. there's some really nice tie-in with Windows 8 on the desktop side, you know, the way it ties into the cloud. So you log into a cloud account and that syncs back down. I think, you know, we're seeing similar things from Apple, and, you know, even from the, you know, Linux vendors and Google, where, you know, you'll have this account that sits in the cloud that that brings a lot of, you know, a lot of your settings and so on down when you log in any machine. And that's one of the things I'm finding quite cool about Windows 8 with those cloud logins.
I think the biggest thing will be who makes it the simplest. And I think with Apple took a step with iCloud. Microsoft with Windows 8 are doing a lot of work with SkyDrive and everything else. Ubuntu's doing a lot of work around the cloud at the moment. But at the end of the day, it'll be who can execute it the simplest, because users will just want it to work. And when they go to another device, they just want their settings. That's what they want. And at the moment, it's some of the current vendors in the market, it's a little bit clunky.
Mm. Well, remember, this is sort of a version one of a lot of this stuff. And even for those people that are a bit freaked out about the user interface with Windows 8, you know, it is the first go, and this stuff will grow over time. There'll be adjustments and tweaks. But, I think it's looking like a good start. And, it's going to be interesting to see what new products come out based around Windows 8, once it actually fully launches into the market later.
From a hardware side of things, I think it's going to be great, because it's going to spur us to go along to rather than just having one version of the hardware, which you get with Apple, you're going to have other vendors coming in which are going to have their hardware, the minimum resolution or the resolutions you've got to have, just like the Windows Phone 7, but you're going to have different flavors of it out there. So you know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get a X number of resolution, it's going to be a quad or dual core, whatever it is, but it's how they interpret and how HP, Dell, IBM, whoever, Asus, go out and actually bring that to us to play with and stuff. So I'm excited. I think it's going to be really, really good seeing, and I want to see some of the ARM hardware.
Now, one thing that's a part of this picture is Intel's new platform, which is Ivy Bridge, and that's due out, I think, next month, isn't it? So that brings with it the new CPUs, which move from a Skip, correct me on this. Is it? Are they moving from 35 nanometers down to 22?
No, other way.
Nanometers?
22 to 18. And they're stepping down from that. It's got a lot of it will have GPU. I actually read an article on this 2 nights ago. It had a GPU, a lot of GPU integration.
No, it's moving to 22. 18 is the next one after that, I think.
I beg to disagree. We'll have a look. After the show, we'll have a look. We'll have a quick look.
But basically, the chips are shrinking down, right? Which means
less power, cooler, no fans, faster, quad cores. It's basically all good for us as consumers.
Excellent. So, that is a part of the picture that will, mean we'll end up with better, faster, sleeker, notebooks. And it really helps with the tablet side of things, I would imagine.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Better. I can see it in ultrabooks. We must see it in these ultra thin devices. That's what we need. I want 10 hours battery life. I want high end graphics, and I want the processing power in a thin device. There's no reason why they can't do it now.
Yep. No, it's a good point. Now, in other exciting news. Now, at some stage, we probably need to talk a little bit more around Mountain Lion from Apple, but I think at this stage we're a little bit locked down by their non-disclosure agreements around the pre-release developer version that we have. So we'll keep a watch on as more information becomes public, and we will certainly cover that. Now, the word is that the Apple iPad 3 will be announced tomorrow, which is probably, by the time most people are listening to this, it may already be landed.
I don't think it is. It is an iPad 3 announcement. They've even got the photo of a guy with an iPad, his hand over the top of it. So yeah, definitely iPad 3 tomorrow. And we sort of think a few other odds and ends, don't we?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion around what the possibilities are, what that iPad 3 is going to look like in terms of higher screen resolution and other changes, better camera. Whether it's going to be dual core or quad core, there's been debate around a lot of those things. There've been some mentions online that people have been seeing visits from a new version of iOS to some websites. Yeah. And then there's also talk around what Apple TV.
Yeah.
Some possibilities there. Most of what I've heard recently rules out the earlier ideas that we were going to see an actual big, you know, big screen TV with Apple, you know, an Apple operating system. That at this stage they're still, you know, staying with the set top box idea.
Yeah. So what I've heard is Apple TV tomorrow, 1080p. Updated version of the iOS on that. This is the rumor mill, right? iPad 3 coming out with a Retina display, but not as good as the iPhone 4. It'll be twice the iPad 2. Also, we've got an
slightly lower pixel density.
There's a little bit of a debate about the Retina display thing in the sense that when you measure these things, you've got to measure it from your usual reading distance.
Yes.
And in some cases, the new iPad, in theory, could actually be better than the iPhone. I'm catching your
depending
flu.
On how close you're
depending on how
it.
You view it, and that's part of it. Is it's kind of like it's quite a hard thing to measure.
Yeah, I suppose if at the end of the day, Apple loves their statistics, so that's what they'll work on. They'll work on a twice screen resolution. It'll be 1080p video on the iPad 3. Now, one of the things we're hearing is that it might be a little bit thicker than the current iPad 2 to accommodate the extra power that's required for the new CPU, the brains behind the which is the A5 chip. Now they're not going to put an A6 in. Apparently, it's going to be an A5X is what we're hearing, which basically means it's going to be a step up from the iPad 2, a bit more grunt to power the Retina display, but there's a little bit of bigger battery. But again, this is all rumour mill. Tomorrow, it'll all become clear.
I love this. There's heaps of updates going on right now, even as we speak. It's like, is it going to be called the iPad 3? Or it could be called the iPad 2S. In fact, there has been some valid rumours that it could be called the iPad HD.
Oh, that's a good one, yeah, because it's going to be all HD content.
But there's some things that people have been saying, you know, we're seeing it appear in some analytics tools on our websites and stuff like that, so... Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one.
iTunes is going to get an update too, as that's what I've heard as well, is that there will be a special HD-only part of iTunes get created, which you'll be able to stream pure 1080p content to go with the iPad 3 and also the Apple TV. But look, I mean, there's a lot going on. People always get hyped up when they hear, you know, when Apple ever does anything. So we'll know tomorrow morning in about 24 hours.
So the chances are that Apple TV, I just find that a bit crazy. I mean, they tend to only release one product at a time to get the most out of their bang for buck in terms of shareholder return.
Yeah, but also something like an Apple TV announcement might not be big enough to actually get a major announce. So by plugging it in with an iPad launch, they, you know, potentially get extra coverage. That's just a guess.
That's an interesting point. It just makes me wonder if maybe the Apple TV could be a little bit less than what we hope it to be. But
well, I think the Apple TV hasn't been such a mainstream product, but it has actually been quietly selling away.
Yeah.
And I think they announced some figures of a month or two back, and you know they'd shot straight past a million units, which is quite a considerable number for you know, for a device of that type. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they keep ramping this up. And if you sell, I mean, even selling a million units of a product like that, you know, it sells for $99 in the US. So yeah, that's $100 million worth of product sales. Better than most other, you know, companies on the planet would ever sell at most products. So
better than my TradeMe sales, that's for sure.
Yeah, so it's it's not such a bad thing. But yeah, I imagine we'll see that stepping up, particularly as people dive more into the Apple ecosystem. It makes you know, sense that more people will jump on board with the Apple TV. I wouldn't be surprised if they move that up to 5 to 10 million units this year.
Nice.
I've got something different. We haven't even looked at the topic agenda that I just discovered just now. This has nothing to do with Apple, by the way. A guy in the US got so frustrated with people talking on mobile phones, he goes, and especially Android and iPhone devices. It's amazing how people are picking up the device now to target. It's quite interesting that he bought a cell phone jammer, a portable one, put it in his pocket, and every time he hops on the bus now, he turns it off so no one on the bus can get access to their cell phones, and then he hops off and turns it off again. And people have been wondering why particular bus routes had no cell phone coverage. And apparently they've spent all this money trying to work it out. And then they've tracked down that this guy's got a portable jammer. And he just wants to have a quiet bus ride, apparently. He's a bit different.
That is absolutely brilliant. Now, for those that are thinking of doing that in New Zealand, it is illegal.
It's illegal in the US.
It's probably illegal in most parts of the world. But
100% legal in the US.
I know you might be able to go and buy one of these somewhere online, of which we're not going to point you in any particular directions. as well as costing somebody a lot of money to track why there's no coverage somewhere, they're illegal. So should be avoided.
Bear in mind, the Ministry of Economic Development do have a van with antennas on the top, and they do track you down.
And usually they're pointing at Skip and Skip's activities. But
Not so much recently.
Oh, okay, you've been good. All right. Now, in other recent news, also Facebook have come out with their Messenger application for Windows with an app coming to Mac soon. So you will be able to do Facebook chit-chats like you've been able to do in Skype and other instant messaging platforms without using the website via your Windows PC. Facebook Messenger does get so broadly used, or Facebook chat gets so broadly used now because everybody that you know tends to be using it, whereas, you know, the other chat platforms, you know, you tend to not be linked in with everyone on it. So I think it's a smart move on their part.
I know this isn't a topic list, but I'm going to jump to it now quickly. The Google privacy thing. There's been just an article just come out recently that apparently the Asia Pacific Privacy Authority, so Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Mexico, Hong Kong, South Korea, have all put a joint letter into Larry Page saying that they are not happy about the recent Google changes in privacy stuff, and that they don't like it that Google's now aggregating and putting everything together about what's going on inside Google, and it's compulsory on every page.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I mean, the EU have already come out and said that actually this new privacy policy changes are actually illegal in the European Union. So yeah, with other regions stepping in and saying that this isn't good, doesn't probably stand out too well for Google. But I can imagine it's something reasonably easy for them to fix. And they could certainly just roll back to their old privacy policy in a jiffy. Righto, now in local news, New Zealand's Commerce Commission has okayed Skinny Mobile SIM-locking their phones. Now, Skinny Mobile, of course, we've chatted about these guys in the past. They're a little startup from within Telecom New Zealand. And they've launched their new mobile brand, Skinny Mobile, sort of low-cost, aimed at a sort of a younger market.
Huge marketing budget, though. They were all over the Rugby Sevens down in Wellington. Apparently, it was just everywhere with Skinny Mobile.
Interesting. So they're focusing, I think, more on events and those sort of things than you know, TV advertising and the like.
Oh, it's the more teenage, young adult market, I think, they're targeting. You know, expect to see lots of Skinny Mobile ads around Twilight and stuff like that, I suppose.
So anyways, this is an interesting one that Commerce Commission have said it's okay for them to SIM lock their phones. So what that means is here in New Zealand, we're going to see what's plagued many overseas markets where you'll buy a phone. Usually, you know, in New Zealand, we buy a phone and it is actually coming through either Vodafone or Telecom or 2Degrees. They've got deals with most of the providers rather than you buying a phone that has no, you know, affiliation with a particular network in terms of the way that it's marketed. And if you buy any handset that is from Skinny, I guess the chances are in the future that it's going to be SIM-locked. So you won't be able to just pick that up and use it on another network.
Now, you're more out of the three of us, you're more the phone advocate and I'm more the media and Skip's just more everything. From your side, from the phone side, I know you buy a lot of devices. Does this mean that if you buy a Skinny device, you can't put it on Vodafone?
Yes and no. I guess the scarier thing is because the Commerce Commission have said okay to Skinny, that there's an opportunity for all the other carriers to move into this. And one carrier does it, the other ones kind of have to do it to stay price competitive. Now, the flip side is that Skinny have said, look, after 9 months, you'll be able to take your phone away to another carrier anyway, and I think at no charge. If you want to do it sooner than that, it's only going to be $30. So it's not a big deal to move your phone away from them. But, you know, that extra $30 is, you know, at least an inconvenience. At most, it's something that'll just stop people, you know, changing to another carrier if they're not happy with the results, because they'll think that their phone can't move so easily.
So, I suppose for people listening, what at the end of the day, if you go to Skinning, be prepared to stay for up to 9 months or beyond, because you're going to have to rejoin a particular, break a contract and go to a new network. Would that be?
Well, it's not to do with contract. It just means if you put, let's say you put a Vodafone SIM in your phone from Skinny, it won't work unless you've either got to the end of that 9 months and you've asked them to unlock it, or you've paid them $30 and talked through over the phone and got your unlock code from them. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not too concerned, because remember, Skinny is at this stage an absolute niche player until they pick up a bit of market share, which they probably will do. But the concern is, because they're doing it, the other players will sort of be forced to do it to keep their phone prices competitive. Because when you SIM lock, you can maybe discount your phones a little bit more, because you know you're likely to have a bit more lock-in from your customers.
Hasn't there been a case of SIM locking before in New Zealand?
Yes, there was a company called Vodafone that did it. You've probably heard of them.
Yeah. I'm just wondering why this one's gone to the Commerce Commission. It just seems like a pretty benign thing. I mean, these guys are turning around, you clowns, these guys are turning around really cheap handsets, really. I mean, it just does seems a bit strange that we'd actually be just checking this as legit.
Well, I think they wanted to be sure before they went into it. There was a bit of hoopla around it last time, and I think Vodafone just sort of quietly stopped doing it because of the uproar. I don't think it got to this sort of point of requesting an official okay.
So, hands up who thinks once, if Skinny starts to get some market share and get some dominance and they get some good phones, how many backyard unlocking places there will be to unlock Skinny phones around the place? Because that's all that's going to happen, right? They're just going to have third party.
I don't know. At $30, it's not actually that expensive to unlock that. You may not even bother with a third-party service, because a third-party, if you go to the stores around Auckland that do unlocking at the moment, most of them charge more than $30 to unlock a phone.
Well, I'll take your advice. I've got a you've done it more than I have, so.
But there are usually various ways of doing it. But
I don't think the general population is going to care. They march with their feet. They'll just go to another plan. Generally, if you go to another plan or a service, you generally get a phone with it anyway, so. It's like, you know what, cut my loss, this is not working for me, if that's the case. I'm not saying that Skinny's not going to work. And they'll just go to another plan and get another phone. Mm.
And I guess, I mean, at the moment, while it's just Skinny, the fact is moving from, you know, that sits on Telecom's XT network, their phones are, not as good once they move on to Vodafone or 2degrees anyway, because they use the 850 megahertz rather than 900 megahertz band.
Yep.
All right. That's probably enough on that one.
That's Skinny done and dusted.
Yeah. Oh, I'm looking forward to it, eh?
To what? Locking phones?
To Skinny coming into the market space properly.
Well, they're already in the market.
No, properly. Like, they're actually starting to make some headway in it.
Well, how do you know when they are or aren't making headway? How can you tell?
When you get a character like Reece Darby on your screen 24 hours a day. No, I don't know.
No, I mean, I think that's just that, you know, 2degrees spent that money and you know, they're taking a different approach. I think probably in the youth market, you'll be seeing more of their sort of activities because they're more focused under line.
They're still not a widely known brand yet. You don't normally see their branding everywhere at this stage, but that's when I start seeing them getting into the market space a bit more.
All right. Now, Brad, you noticed that in Australia there's some new rules coming out that are going to impact bloggers there.
It's going to impact you. That's the primary function at the moment. Yeah, so at the moment, people like all of us who blog, and there's probably quite a big audience out there, we can sort of put anything we want in the media to an extent, and we're not bound by publishing laws, which means that, for instance, if Stuff or NZ Herald or CNN put anything on their website, if for any reason they get a request or an order by the courts, they actually have to take down within a certain time frame or correct that statement. So that's why you'll see sites like The Verge, for instance, that do a lot of blogging, have update. Now, the new law that's coming out, proposed new law that's coming out in Oz, which says if you are a blogger and you get more than 41 page impressions, and from Mr. Paul Spain, that's not a lot, then you will be classed as a publisher, which means that you will fall under the same laws as publishers like Sydney Morning Herald stuff, New Zealand Herald, and you might have to be able to correct your publications within a certain time frame. Otherwise, you can get taken to court.
Yeah, they're, I guess they're holding to a higher standard of account. I mean, the reality is, anything you put online, you know, you've still got the potential to be, you know, come into trouble if you post false statements, libel, and those sorts of things. That's one of the challenges message boards have quite regularly too.
But for you, as quite a prolific blogger and out in the industry out there, you know, falling under the same laws as a publisher now means your, I suppose, blogging's been a little bit more free, a little bit more less restricted. How do you feel about being maybe put under those same restrictions and potentially, you know, on a Windows Phone NZ site, suddenly having to be put to pull down a whole lot of content, otherwise you'll have a cease and assist and legal and blah 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 coming to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of cases it's not really a big drama, and I guess it will encourage, you know, people in terms of keeping a good professional standard. But yeah, I think there are situations where it could become a bit of a nightmare. But you know, I think we'd need to do a little bit more research about, you know, exactly what those differences are compared to you know, the standards that people have got to stick to today. And hey, it's in Australia, so it doesn't impact us just yet. But if Australia does it, then there's a reasonable chance that something similar will happen here.
As my lovely wife, who is Australian, tells me, New Zealand's just another state of Australia.
It is apparently.
It is in the official charter over there.
Where did the 41 come from? That just seems like such a random number.
What I'll do is I'll do some homework and I'll do some more digging on this.
And you can do a blog post about it, Brad.
Get it taken down by the Australian government.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, I just look, for me at the moment, I think there's, like you said, you can't go on the internet and spout off garbage because you will get in trouble and you do have people chasing you. But blogging's not just about us as IT people. It's like my son's school has a blogging area where they blog, and that's public as well. And imagine kids getting forced into, you know, those same type of rules and governance, or teenagers, you know, or, you know, we've got Nate in the studio at the moment as a guest, you know, Nate blogging on his phone right now saying he's talking about this. We could, you know, you don't want to have that level of control over everyone put on you. So I don't know. I think it's getting a little bit too restrictive, but there does need to be, I think if you're doing it and making money out of it, then maybe you need to fall under the publishing laws.
Yeah, I think the making money out of it, but might be more of a bit of measurement. But
and that's hard to measure. That's why you've got to have some line that you can measure across the board, rather than whether somebody makes $5 or, you know, $1,000, because there's probably all sorts of ways of measuring that.
It's interesting you say that, because, I mean, how are they going to measure from an external source whether you've got 41 page hits on a particular thing? It's kind of like, just make it a blanket policy for the web if you're going to do that. Really. And then the question is, does it count for you if you're hosting stuff in Australia? So if I'm a Kiwi and I'm using a server in Australia, does that mean I'm fall under that law? Or if I'm an Australian blogging with a service in the States, do I fall under the same law? Tricky
yep.
questions.
And there's certainly a little bit more to find out there, so we'll send Brad away to do that research. Now, something on a different matter that I've noticed has becoming more popular within here with the NZ Tech podcast crew, and I guess, you know, probably on an ongoing, you know, basis internationally, is the Kindle in its various flavors. Brad's been telling us a lot about the Kindle Fire recently, which is his favorite device. Skip's been using Kindle Touch, I think, in the last few days, and has been loving it. Is that right,
yeah.
Skip?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And I'm on my second Kindle. And in fact, the Kindle Fire arrives for me tomorrow. And I've just sort of jumped in boots of it all. Now, the reason in my case is I'm about to go away on holiday. And as we all know, it's really expensive to carry a lot of luggage. So I've bought about 10 books, and I'm taking them off to read while I'm on the beach in Samoa.
Don't forget the battery charger.
I've got that. In fact, I've got the famous gadget that I picked up in the US, which is solar powered and has a crank handle. So even if I'm away from the power grid, I will still be able to power my Kindle. How's
this? Is Brad just shaking his head in sadness at Paul at the moment?
Paul's going to get a great upper body workout as he cranks that handle.
Comes back with like a huge bicep. That was what I was cranking to keep my iPad and the stuff going.
But because Samoa doesn't have any data roaming, I am not going to get a $2,000 bill for my mobile phone usage. In fact, I'll be off the grid, guys. So I won't even be able to listen in to you guys or join the chat or anything. So it looks like we might have to ask Nate to step in as a guest next week.
He's committed now. It's on air.
Yeah, okay.
Well, next week, here's Nate, your homework for next week. CBIT's on at the moment in Germany, so we'll do a quick wrap-up of CBIT for next week. Yep. So that will be it. We'll be discussing
CBIT. We'll just want a little sort of 20 minutes pre-say of what's gone
2000
on
2,000 words, thank you.
So, I'll probably have a few more comments on Kindle after having that as pretty much my only piece of technology while away for a few days.
So just quickly around the news now. For those of you who used to love Disk Keeper, we were in the old days of defragging everything.
Defragging your disks. I know. That's right.
It's gone. The name's gone. They're basically rebranding themselves to work on flash drives and other smaller style media. They're now going to be called Conducive. They will just keep doing Disk Keeper product, but it'll be Undelete and Scandisk. Micro based disk technology.
So they'll still be keeping your disks running fast and smooth.
No Disk Keeper, because I love Disk Keeper. It was great. But I suppose as operating systems like Windows and Apple and all the other ones have actually got better file systems built into it, and obviously Linux as well, the need has been sort of, I suppose, engineered out of the product from that side.
Fair enough. All right. Any other finishing news items, guys?
I just want to note one little funny story, actually. In the UK... Now this is actually in the legal court document, so it's now on legal record. An Apple fanboy, isn't that cool? That's now a legal word. took Apple to court in the UK because Siri didn't perform as he saw in the ads from the US. Now he's obviously lost because he's a muppet, but because in the actual things it says will not operate the same
it's
as in the
favorite word
it
this
is
week,
it's my
isn't
word
it?
Of the night. It will not operate the same as in the US. Will only do email updates, calendar. They actually outlined in the ads over there what it would do.
Oh, and the fine print at the bottom of the screen, which you can't really read unless.
Well, if you had a new Retina display, you might be able to see it. But obviously,
Retina eyes.
Yeah, but he would watch he watched all the YouTube videos and thought his version of Siri in the UK could do exactly like the American Siri, and he took them to court. He lost. He spent £5,000 trying to do it. So. Don't take Apple to court. You're not going to win. They've got a gazillion billion dollars in the bank. And
You have a finite amount of money. Apple have an infinite amount of money.
Go after Microsoft. They've got a little bit less. Or Google have got a little bit less. Amazon, they've got a little bit less still.
Apple's $510 billion. $369 as of yesterday. Google's $270 and Amazon's around the $100 mark. Don't ask me how I know that. I just happen to be actually looking at the new Windows 8 stock app and it actually lists their market value.
Wow.
So,
well, there you go.
I was using the finance app in Windows 8. There you go.
Excellent. Well, that wraps us up for another week on the NZ Tech Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. You can, of course, find us online. Now, Skip, you're on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Yep, it's at UrbanKiwiNZ.
And Brad?
At Brad Bohr.
And mine is just my name, Paul Spain. And, of course, nztechpodcast.com is our website. We're at facebook.com/nztechpodcast. If you like us, then that's appreciated. And twitter.com/nztechpodcast. So keep in touch with us on those channels. We are trying to spread out a bit of news in between shows of bargains and other bits and pieces, sort of tech news that are going on. Now, also coming up next week, we expect to have an announcement on Orcon's ultra-fast broadband rates. They're making a big announcement Wednesday, and that's what we're picking that will be all about. And you can check out our UFB page on the nztechpodcast.com site also if you're interested in when ultra-fast broadband is coming to your home.
And Microsoft has just gone to $269.13 billion, and we've got special guest Nate next week with his CBIT announcement.
Excellent. Looking forward to hearing that. Cheers.
See ya.
Thanks for listening.